Hey everybody, the Con Artist here. We told you we'd be back for a bonus episode all about what we were watching that was outside of the realms of what we were talking about on our normal bi-weekly cast. So it's just Scott and I today. Ugh. We were the only non-lamoids who were following other stuff, those losers. Oh well.
There's so much to see. What are they up to, those guys?
Gosh. Whatever. All right, it's the party team. You and I, Scott.
That's right.
Team party. All right. So, Scott, why don't you, I guess, start us off? Because you have a lot of stuff you were following, which is amazing.
That's true. I followed quite a bit. So I'll be doing mine sort of in terms of from the stuff that I think is the best all the way down to the worst. So the best of the season, like stuff we didn't already talk about, is Shingeki no Bahamut Virgin Soul. So this is a sort of a sequel to the original Shingeki no Bahamut, which was a couple seasons ago. And much as with that predecessor, this one has a plot that I was really never able to predict, and I really appreciate that in a show. Like, nothing's cliche.
That's rare for you. I mean, you're usually able to guess.
Yeah, and I'm like watching this, like, what are they going to do next?
Some certainty what's going to happen.
No, this one really keeps you guessing. It also has excellent animation quality, really good atmospheric music, and a diverse cast. All that stuff doesn't hurt either.
You know, I've never seen any of the Rage of Bahamut stuff, but I could see on Anime News Network the little snippet they'll put for the episode when they were reviewing it, and that animation looks way nicer than I'm used to for anime. Like, it has a way more real body proportions, it looks like, and people look more real than I guess the Moe Blob stuff we're used to nowadays.
Oh, definitely, especially the first few episodes of the original show. Like, it looks really different from anime these days. Like, very, I don't even know if I should call it stylized exactly, but you're right, like, more realistic proportions.
Yeah, that's pretty rare nowadays, because I think everybody's trying to hedge their bets on that Moe look, or that almost like, I've heard it described as cherub feel, where he's got these round, soft faces, and this looked like it steered away from that and was like, no, we're going to go for that more real, solid person-looking feel.
Definitely. And it's, there's a complex story for the characters to go through, which is really good. So there's a lot of character drama, in addition to all the swords and sorcery battles and spectacle that you might expect. And boy, does the show do spectacle well. There is some really impressive stuff going on.
You really need to have seen the first season to watch this one, right? You can't just jump in to this one.
I would seriously advise watching the original first. Many of the characters are carried over from the original, and they do like an okay job of explaining who they are. But a lot of stuff, including a lot of really impactful moments, only makes sense because of things that happened exclusively in the first series. So definitely watch the show, the original first, if you're going to watch this.
Nice.
Let's see. I mean, I guess briefly, so this one's the story of Nina, who is a young dragon girl, and she's coming to the human capital. There's humans, gods, and demons in the world. And she's just there to go make her fortune, and then she gets involved with all of these other various forces, all with their own agenda. Like, the king wants more power, the demons are oppressed, the gods are trying to take back, like, humanity's faith, since they don't really believe that much anymore. And everyone has their own thing going on, so kind of an adventure story with a pretty big cast, but there's all these twists and turns that keep it interesting. So definitely recommended.
Now, does it end, or do you feel a season 3 coming on?
Oh, no. They could very well, like, the first season didn't think it needed it wraps up beautifully, and they're like, well, you know what? We could just do some more. So they could always do that, but there's no, like, hook for another season, I guess.
That's a rarity too. Man, this is like a rare, super rare show. This is like the legendary Pokemon of shows here.
Well, actually, make sure you catch it. Okay. Let's see. Yes, that's what I got for that one. Then there's Princess Principal. Now, I know Dan covered some of this earlier in the season for those of us who were following along in the weekly cast, but he ended up dropping it and I did finish it, so I'll do a little talking about it in his place. For those not remembering, it's set in a steampunk Victorian England that's in the middle of a civil Cold War, with the two sides being split by a large wall. The protagonists are a group of high school-age spies that masquerade as students on the wrong side of the wall, like an all-girl team. Each episode is generally about a different mission that they go on, and it's fairly episodic, but the show's focus is about half on the mission and half on the characters themselves.
So I have to know, when you guys left off, every girl was getting an episode via flashback, And I was so curious if it was going to lead to a thing. Like, all that character development was going to mean something. Did it mean something?
Kinda. Like, eventually we have episodes that aren't flashback episodes, or, like, you know, a girl getting her own episode where we explore her story or whatever. But we don't really ever learn enough about these characters to... I don't know, to really know what their deal is, I guess. Like, there's this whole thing where they have their spies and they keep their emotions sort of bottled up, and they don't really tell each other things, because that's the nature of being a spy. But they kind of take it too far, and by the end I didn't really feel the drama when the show decided it was going to raise the stakes on the characters. So I would say that part's the biggest flub of the show overall.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like it was really leading to. I mean, if you're going to waste an episode, I shouldn't say waste, but if you're going to use an episode for every girl, it's got to lead to a thing, man. That's a lot of time used, because it was only a 13er, yeah?
Exactly. Like, basically, like, you'll know who each of the characters are, but, which is fine, but you don't really get a strong sense of them as a team, or, like, I don't know, you don't care as much as you should. So, oh well.
Well, that's just too bad.
Yeah, I mean, the good parts of the show, like, the animation's pretty good. They put quite a bit of time into world building and showing us posters on the walls or, like, glimpses of the lives of the general citizens, all of which are quite good. Music's pretty good. If you want steampunk lady spy action, like, sort of smash and grab rather than subtlety, it's all good. But it's not incredible.
So. I'm curious, does the show pass the Bechdel test? Or are they all, like, working for some... Charlie's Angels, like, they're all Charlie's Angels working for some guy that they never see that's super hot, that's their only objective.
They do work for a sort of, they know who the people they work are for. It's like a council of, like, there's like a military guy, a government guy, the spy guy, like, and there's a, you know, lady on it too, whatever, and they kind of give them their missions, but they talk directly with them, and most of the time the girls are talking about each other or the mission or their pasts. Like, there's actually almost no male characters other than villains in the show.
Fascinating.
So I guess in some degree it does, you know, pass. I don't think, I forget the name of the test is, but sure, like, a woman talks to another woman and it isn't about a man. So
yeah, it's Bechdel.
Oh, Bechdel? Okay. It does. I would say that it does pass that, since there's exactly one male character to talk about, the Duke of Normandy, and he's only in about 3 episodes.
Man. Wow. All right, so I guess, do you feel like us knowing Dan, do you think he should have continued, or would it have just been a breakdown fest for him the whole way through the rest of it?
I mean, I think he would have spent a lot of time tearing it down. I don't know that he would have enjoyed seeing the rest of it, so it's probably fine he didn't.
Good that he jumped out where he did, then.
Yeah, like I said, recommended for smash and grab action if you want to see that, but it's not like you got to watch this show.
All right, okay. So I'll take over. I was watching Recreators, which, if everyone remembers, from quite a while ago now. Basically, the premise is that a bunch of characters from anime and video games start falling into the real world, and they meet up with their creators, and just, you know, chaos ensues because they all have different objectives and different thoughts and different feelings. And the show is very exploratory on how these characters feel when they meet their creators and how they feel about being creations in and of itself, where their fate was never really theirs to begin with, or it never really in their hands to begin with. So this show was amazing. I mean, top-notch animation all the way through. It's got the Hawano Shirayuki soundtrack going on, which is fantastic. Just the second half, so I described the first half, which was just all the characters meeting each other and getting into conflicts. The second half is very heavy in the... There's one character, her name is Altair. She is this super-de-duper overpowered character that all the other characters... Some of them side with her in the beginning and others don't. She has this overarching plot where she's trying to destroy the world, and instead of it being your classic, like... I'm just a villain character. I'm trying to destroy the world. Mwahaha, look at me.
Or don't forget, I'm so sad that everyone should die. That's a good one, too.
Yes, I'm so... So actually, it's funny you should say that. I won't reveal exactly what it is, but I found her story incredibly compelling. The reason as to why she's trying to destroy the world, like all the other characters, has something to do with her creator. And her creator features into, I think, a part of just being somebody who has to live in that creative space, whether you're an artist or a writer or an animator. You know, you're living in this space where your work has to be on display to make money and is constantly under criticism. And that world is something we don't normally recognize. Like, we don't always think about it. And, you know, these people work day in and day out to make this anime and or to make these games. And these characters, they come to terms with that. We as viewers come to terms with just how much energy gets poured into this. And it really digs very deep into the idea of, you know, why we create, and I think I mentioned this in the first cast, but it's really like why we create, why we make worlds that are so much more harsh and brutal than our own. That sort of deep dive is very prevalent, and I found
it's a pretty big theme to go for.
And it's very unique. It's an original show, so it's got no baggage. You could really tell that a lot of the creators of this show were reflecting on their own experiences. It felt like a very personal show, and it all leads towards something that, you know, very firmly ends. I thought it was a beautiful ending. I thought the complexity of the quote-unquote villain, and there's a reason I put her in quote-unquotes, because it's really up to you to decide, I think, in the end, what you felt about her, was phenomenal. And I really had me thinking, and that's rare for an anime that a lot of times is just throwaway entertainment. Very high on my recommendation list. Everyone should check it out. So that one turned out fantastic. I was really excited.
Well, awesome. I have to check that out.
Indeed. I think you would enjoy it, actually.
Oh, good.
Oh, so now we're in the second half. You're getting into some bad stuff.
That's right. The previous two were, you know, either unqualified or qualified recommendations. Everything from here on my list is kind of And let's lead off with the Kantai Collection movie. Folks, there is a Kantai Collection movie now.
Why is there a Kantai Collection movie?
Now, for those blissfully unaware, Kantai Collection is a show where girls who are also World War II Japanese naval vessels refight the Pacific War against scantily clad evil girls representing America.
Thanks, America.
Yeah, geez, guys. I did a whole panel on it, so you can see that on our website, because it is some high-grade garbage. Now it has a movie that is basically more of the same. There's just enough detail that nothing makes sense. Part two.
Hooray! And now, is it a beautifully animated, like, stupid movie?
I was going to say, the only thing I will give the movie is that it does look good, and that is about it. So the only reason that you should watch this is if you're a fan of the show. You monster.
But Scott, I must know, does the Yamato ever actually get out of port?
The Yamato does get out of port and shoots some stuff. There's some action with her. It's great.
Wow.
Just the best.
Look at you, Yamato. Instead of just like carrying lemonade, you sure can do a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, don't watch this. I'll probably do a panel on it on why it's bad someday. Watch that instead. That's it for Kantai.
Goodbye, Kantai.
Goodbye. Which takes us to, like, that's like the middle range of bad. Now we're into the real dregs. I did follow all the way to the end that Isekai wa smartphone thing, though, with, like, trapped in another world with my smartphone or something.
I am shocked you followed that. Like, just from the way you described it early on in the bi-weeklies, it did not sound like something that you would have followed.
Ugh. Like, you ever get, Sue, when you're watching and you're like, man, I could do a panel on this.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that's, I got that pretty quickly in it, but man, I got some things to say about this. This show is terrible. No sense of pacing, uninspired world building, an all-star cast of characters rigidly locked into their trope archetypes, and basically no story at all. But let me tell you how I really feel.
Damn, the full, like, package, baby!
It's got it all. But wait, it also has to be some of the most lamest, some of the most lame and most transparent male power fantasy nonsense ever produced. Finally, Sue, a hero who can rival Tenshi Muyo War on Geminar.
Oh, damn.
Let me tell you about this. Oh, yes, I did. Let me tell you about this guy's qualifications, Sue.
I'm so excited.
He can use all six elements of magic in a world where three is considered something special. And you can also use a special kind of magic called null, which is basically magic unique to an individual. Like, each person knows one single null spell that is theirs and theirs alone. This guy can use all of them. Like, if he sees them once or even reads about them, he can use that.
Oh my gosh, okay.
He's got a direct phone line to God himself. And he can also go visit the guy in person whenever he wants.
What?
Like, every single challenge he encounters is dispatched so easily, it's a wonder they even wasted the animation budget. If they'd had, like, an intertitle, like a silent movie thing where it goes, and then he defeated everyone instantly and saved the day, that would have been a lot cheaper on their part.
Wait, hang on, I'm swooning.
Oh, I know. Let me give you an example. The party is once about to be ambushed by about four groups of maybe 10 guys each, and they somehow see it coming. So he asks his smartphone to find all the bad guys, which it does, and kind of puts them on the, like, pinpoints their location on the screen. So then he drag selects them all and does a pinpoint simultaneously ranged magical snare spell he casts through the screen, instantly incapacitating all of them.
Like, thank
that's the kind of level of challenge we were looking
goodness.
At here.
Goodness. Does he ever lose his smartphone?
No, the smartphone is never lost or damaged in any way through the course of the show. It's also relatively unimportant. Like, he's so magically powerful that the smartphone is basically an afterthought.
Oh my gosh.
But if you're swooning, Sue, that means you
I'm
might want to be part.
Pretty hard.
You might want to be part of his dedicated harem, because of course he accumulates one of those.
Sign me up!
Oh yeah, like, it starts off with four, plus others that are sort of pining for him from afar, and sort of in a change to the usual formula, there is no conflict between any member of his harem. Just all of them sort of competing to show off for him and attract his gaze to them instead of the others. And by the end, he just agrees to marry all four of them, which they are, like, 100% on board with.
Oh my gosh.
They're like, will you marry me? All of us? And he's like, yeah, I could do that. And then he's got a robot okay. girl. Of course, who gets a message from the future.
Well, thank goodness, because
that states
one felt
he's gonna
left
have,
out.
Of course. It states he'll have 9 wives eventually. Because of course he will.
Because so there are like 5 hidden girls. Are they hinting at a sequel?
They're definitely hinting at a sequel, but I mean, most of the girls that are in this, they sort of do a pan over. Many of them are characters in the show that are already pining for him from afar. I guess they're gonna have, like, get more directly into the party eventually. Like,
dang.
Oh,
well,
just,
you know what? That makes me lucky number 10.
You could be lucky number 10. So, short version is, watch this show if you want, but know that I'm judging you.
What a great way to phrase that. Judgment. Judge. We should sell Scott's judging you stickers.
I like this idea. All right, so what did you watch? Hopefully something else good, because...
It's time to go back to the dark horse of the season. It's time! So Brendan gave out on action heroine cheer fruits, yo!
Oh, yeah!
Guys, if you aren't following the show, when I freaking recommended it to you so hard in the beginning of the bi-weeklies, you lost out. Cheer fruits is awesome. Like, it's everything
yes.
I ever wanted out of this show. For those of you that don't remember, because it was quite a while ago, these 7. How many are on that team again eventually? 7, right?
Quite a few, yeah.
Yeah, it's like 7 girls. Eventually it's 7 girls, but basically it's set in Hinano Village.
Hinano, yep.
Yeah, Hinano City, sorry. So every city or every prefecture has its own hero or heroine. And this hero or heroine has a show that kids watch, and that hero or heroine uses some sort of local good that is from that prefecture or that city, and that helps advertise to people to come to the city and buy goods and help
stimulate
the economy. It's like
tourism, yeah, tourism plus like TV shows for kids, like combined.
Yes, exactly. So Hinano doesn't have one of these, and the girl Misaki is trying to save the cultural center, which is in Hinano. Her grandfather, like, blood, sweat, and tears to build this place. And he loved it so much, and it's about to be torn down. And her aunt is like, if you can fill the entire cultural center, maybe the committee will reconsider. And she's like, oh, watch me. And so she watches a whole bunch of these characters, the most popular of which is Kamidayo. From the one prefecture, and Kamidayo is sort of like a magical girl, if you had to really put it. She, like, fights, think of it like a Power Rangers type of show,
yeah,
like
definitely
that.
Power Rangers, like Sentai, sort of. Yeah, like cheesy effects and like, you know, villain of the week.
Exactly. So that kind of stuff. But what's neat about it is it's all set on a stage, so it's even more sort of
I love the stagecraft aspect of the show.
It's huge, you know, and that continues. We talked about it in episodes 1, 2, and 3, and that keeps going because later on they add a girl who helps do special effects. She's into like ballistics and stuff.
Yeah, like so cranes to like have her fly around and explosions to do, you know, like little explosions and colored smoke and stuff.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, obviously there's some anime gloss over in there. It happens a little too cleanly, but there's a lot of thought really put into that. Like at one point she shows off this girl, Pink Ranger, we'll call her. So she shows off all of her ballistics and all the girls are like, no, you're fired. You're not joining the team. All of these like, ballistics were super dangerous.
Too dangerous. Like this rocks falling everywhere.
Yeah, there's explosions and rocks, and I don't know where that crane was swinging, and we have children in this audience. No. Live children. And she's like, Like, it's not taped. It's in front of a live audience. And so they like, fire her, and she has to, like, crawl her way back onto the team. So they put a lot of thought into just the stage elements, the sound, like, later there's sound. And I think what's really neat is, unlike something like Princess Principal, it weaves in character development so beautifully.
It's well done.
Like, every girl gets a moment, and what's cool is they really don't dwell on those moments as though they need to, like, ram it all in. Like, my favorite moment was Blue Ranger, I think Aoi, and her sister Genki. So Genki is handicapped. She's in a wheelchair. And they don't really tell you much, but she wasn't born that way. She used to be normal and eventually, or she used to be able to walk normally, I should say, not normal. And she eventually is in an accident or something and loses the ability to use her legs. Aoi is a pop star in one of the most popular idol groups, and she ends up like coming back to town and she doesn't really talk about it for a while. And then eventually you realize it's because the manager wanted her to kind of create a sob story for herself to garner more attention to both the group and herself, to make herself more popular by selling basically the story of Genki and how she became handicapped and how she's like in the pop idol group to support her handicapped sister. And Aoi just refuses and then gets kicked out. And you know, the show like drops that in there and then doesn't really dwell on it. It's like it's this dig at the Japanese pop idol industry and then it just moves on. So it was,
yeah, like
it was
a lot of it's
really
especially with
impressive.
Her, like it's a lot of it's sort of subtle. Like, you know, a lot of different cases they'll be saying, you know, the characters will be saying or doing something and they'll sort of inadvertently, I don't know, say something about needing like a certain level of physical ability, and then people will sort of like realize, you know, whoops, we shouldn't have really said that here. Like, I hope we don't make Genki feel bad. Or like the relationship between her and her sister, they're always sort of helping each other, but they don't really like it happens in the background. Like the show doesn't focus all the way up in and be like, here's a very special episode about the two sisters. Like it just sort of
right,
happens
it's not like
on
a
the
PBS
side.
Special. It's just like it's there.
It's there.
Was handled,
that's who they are.
You know, it really reminded me of the way that kind of stuff was handled back in 90s shows, you know, like, yeah, there's a character in a wheelchair. That's about it. Like, she's not there to sell toys. She's not there to be a moe sell. She's just like, there's a girl in a wheelchair. Done. Like, we're just going to move on with this.
They're going to move on for it, but they're always going to, like, you know, if there's stairs or something in the way, they never...
They make sure to, like, help you understand that's tough for her. Like, there's a sequence where she's walking up with a cane, and, like, you understand it's harder for her than normal, and...
Like, yeah, but, like, it's in the middle of a conversation between her and her sister. Like, and the focus is the conversation, not the climbing the stairs. It's just a background detail. It's, like, it's very well done.
Yeah, so they really understand that kind of character dynamic. Every character struggles, like, with their role in the show. Like, at one point, I forget her name. The girl who's yellow, she struggles very hard with her image because she's not, like, super physically fit. Because, like, the Red Ranger, Anne, is a rhythmic gymnastics competitor, right. Like, a really good rhythmic gymnastics athlete. So is Cannon, who's one of the villains, and then, like, Roku?
Roku, yeah.
Yeah, Roku is fairly athletic because she used to play tennis, and, like, you have a lot of these fairly athletic characters, and then you have poor her, like, poor Yellow, who's just like, I'm not very good at this. But you know what? She finds her niche in plot writing. She writes the episodes. Like, it's this neat blend of all these girls just learning to be strong people and fitting into this unit and there isn't tons of fan service, and it's adorable, and you could watch it with your kids, and it's just a whole bunch of fun. It's colorful, it's playful, it's fun. I think my favorite part was where Genki becomes the director.
Oh, that was their great.
She, like, buys an entire, like, box or multiple boxes of these tin ashtrays that she just chucks at the girls every time they do something wrong. And she's like, be more in character. Your character is supposed to be from Mexico. Love Mexico. Be Mexico. What do they say in Mexico?
Right, which is like a throwaway, like, two-line introduction for the character in the first episode she appeared in. She's like, the audience has forgotten that, like, you left behind your friends in Mexico, but you haven't, and you have to show that.
Yeah, or like, wow. The one character, she's like, green. You're supposed to be, like, a Buddhist monk type, so you have to be able to show that you are pious and that you're calling upon the spirits. And she's like, okay. It's just a blast. But I'm yammering on about it. Definitely watch this show. It's such a blast. It's super heartwarming. Like, it's just always a good time. I was always in a good mood when I watched it. And it's a lot of fun to see these young women, like, really growing into themselves without the need for creepy fan service. There is one fan service episode, now that I'm remembering, the Hot Springs episode, but just...
There's a Hot Springs thing, like, many of the, you know, since it's an all-girls cast, like, many of the girls are sort of, you know, best of friends with each other, maybe even a little more, but it doesn't, like, go too far in any direction.
Yeah, so it's always a good time, and highly recommended. Definitely watch it. It's the dark horse. Like, you looked at it, and you probably glossed clean over it. Just watch it. It's
You're
great.
Like, yeah, color-coded girls, the thing, okay, yeah. Nope,
Fruit,
it's worth it.
No. Yeah, it's definitely awesome. Do it.
Do it. All right, and that, man, after, we gotta
Wait,
do this.
Wait, there's one more? It must be so garbage.
There's one more, all the way at the very, very bottom of my list.
Wait, I can't see it.
Shockingly worse than smartphone.
Hang on, I need a magnifying glass. Okay, now I can sort of see it. It's that tiny speck way down there?
It's that tiny speck. It's the irresponsible Galaxy Tyler.
What the devil is that?
That stupid, incomprehensible reboots are not just Hollywood's problem. So this is a kind of sequel to the classic Irresponsible Captain Tyler anime, a show that holds a special and nostalgic place in my heart, which makes it all the more enraging watching this trash. So... It's got 12 episodes, they're about 2.5 minutes long, including the ending theme, and with something so short, it is amazing that they were still able to weave such a rich, textured tapestry of failure.
Good freaking gracious. Okay, so does it have anything to do with Tyler? Like, do the characters appear? Or are they demented forms of themselves? Like, what is this?
All the characters you liked from the original show are gone. Replaced by uninspired ripoffs, and the plot, such as it is, has nothing to do with the original either. It actually starts, like, the show starts with the narrator saying, basically, everyone from the original show is dead, and they've been dead for so long that even their memory is dust. So it's like, what? Why would you even bother putting the Tyler name on this? I don't get it.
Yeah, what the heck? Are they using basically the same setting or the same races or something?
No and no. So the setting is like, in the original show, there was a war between these two humans and this other alien race. So he's like, the guy's like, basically, it's so far in the future that everyone lives on this basically like a Dyson Sphere ring world thing. Like, everyone lives there. There's no more countries or anything. So none of that matters anymore. And then they just kind of wander around the surface of this structure for the whole show, just having random things happen. I mean, again, with 2 minutes, you don't got a lot of time. So there's basically a character who's kind of like Tyler. A character who's kind of like Azalin, the enemy empress, and a character who's kind of like Yamamoto, who is Tyler's second in command. But they're all just the palest imitations of the original characters. And then the show looks terrible. It looks god-awful.
Yeah, you showed us Ep 1, and like, I died a lot inside, and then couldn't get up out of the curled ball I was in for at least like 10 minutes.
Like... I was going to say, oh, it's some kind of cheap marketing push trying to squeeze a little cash from this long retired cow, but it looks, sounds, and is so bad that, like, that can't be it. What are they doing? It's baffling, and I hate it so much.
That's absolutely incredible. Like, exactly what you said, I don't even know, because it's not like you could merchandise this. It's not like it makes you want to go watch Tyler, and... It's just complete and utter trash.
It is, like, every episode is just a random thing happens, and then it kind of gets solved, and then the episode's over, and there's, like, the ending theme song is generally, again, some kind of cheesecake shot of one of the characters. So maybe that's what the marketing pushes. Like, hey, look at this background detail on this character. I don't get it.
Hooray?
Hooray.
You know, these are the moments that we, like, almost consider not being anime fans anymore. Like, these are those moments that when people walk through and they're like, oh, you're those creepy people. You're like, yeah, yo, you watched, like, Irresponsible Galaxy Tyler, didn't you? Don't watch that. No.
Don't watch it, folks.
Watch, like, Cheerfruits instead.
Yeah, watch Cheerfruits. Let me get there. Cheerfruits instead. Thumbs up.
Yes. So, oh, that is hot garbage. Holy cow. And how long was the show? Like, how many episodes?
12 episodes, so it's, the whole thing is maybe a half hour long, something like that.
Wow, good gracious.
But its short length does not make it worth watching. Don't waste your half hour, everyone. Like, you could watch a whole episode of Cheerfruits in that time.
Yeah, watch Cheerfruits. Just do it. Cheerfruits and Recreators, watch that. They were great.
Yep, or Bahamut, something like that. Maybe even Princess Principal, but not this one.
Yeah, pass. Good gracious. All right. Well, I think that wraps us up.
Yeah.
I think we both had fairly good seasons. You at least got a panel out of the second half of yours.
I have, like, Can Cola Movie and Smartphone and maybe even Tyler. Like, there's panels coming out of years now.
That's fantastic. Material for years.
Oh.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks for tuning in. And Scott and I got a full plate for next season, too. So you'll probably end up with us again. Just hanging out, talking about all the stuff.
Yep, join us then.
Laters.
Hopefully it won't be as bad.
This is a podcast by The Con Artists. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your Android podcast app of choice. For more anime and game-related content, please visit us online at theconartistsblog.com. Thanks for listening.